Penguin Random House Audio presents Fear is Just a Word. A missing daughter, a violent cartel, and a mother's quest for vengeance. By Azam Ahmed. Read for you by Sheldon Romero. To Shanaz Ahmed, who showed me a mother's love is enough. Mortui vivos docent. Let the dead teach the living. Latin proverb. El desaparecido se lleva hasta su silencio. The disappeared leave nothing behind, not even their silence. Elena Poniatowska. Fuerte es el silencio. Tome conciencia, tal vez como nunca antes, de que la comunidad que se había formado alrededor de un puñado de moribundos estaba desaparecida. Y desaparecida nuestras voces, nuestros olores, nuestros deseos. Vivimos, por decirlo así, a medias. O mejor, vivíamos con un pie dentro de la muerte y otro todavía pisando el terreno de algo parecido solamente de manera remota a la vida. Pocos sabían de nosotros y aún menos se preocupaban por nuestro destino. I became aware, perhaps, like never before, that this community formed around a handful of failing souls was, in fact, disappeared. And disappeared were our voices, our smells, our desires. We lived, if you will, in the in-between. Or rather, we lived with one foot in the grave and the other on terrain that held only a remote resemblance to life. Very few knew about us, and even fewer worried about our fate. Cristina Rivera Garza, The Iliac Crest. Prologue. On the Hunt. The Florist. Number 11. March 27th, 2016. In the early morning hours at the Matamoros International Bridge between Mexico and Texas, the air had a bracing chill. Miriam Rodriguez had left home in a rush and wore a trench coat over her pajamas. A baseball cap covered her hair, which had been dyed bright red to distract from her face. In her coat pocket, she carried a loaded .38 pistol. She scanned the crowd of street vendors selling cold water, knockoff sunglasses, and pirated movies along the concrete esplanade that led up to the bridge. It was shortly after 8 in the morning on Sunday, March 27, 2016. Medium's husband, Luis, had parked the truck somewhere safe and stayed there, out of the way, which he often did when Median was on the hunt. Median was stalking one of the killers of her daughter Karen, known as the Florist. He was a member of the Zeta drug cartel, which U.S. authorities considered to be the most violent group in all of Mexico. In their campaign to dominate the nation's criminal economy, the Zetas had blazed a trail of violence through more than a dozen Mexican states, trafficking drugs, smuggling migrants, and kidnapping for ransom. 2 years earlier, in January 2014, the Zeta cell that the Florist belonged to had kidnapped Karen. Median had begged, pleaded, and paid ransoms she could not afford, following the Zeta's every instructions. She got nothing in return. Not even knowledge of what had happened to Karen. Government authorities had dismissed her, ignoring her entreaties or meeting them with a practiced formality that barely masked their apathy. In that void, her grief gave way to acceptance and then to resolve, to seek revenge and pursue justice herself for Karen and for the other families of the disappeared. Karen, her youngest, had been for Medium an unexpected pregnancy. The baby's birth had breathed new life into her failing marriage. With Karen gone, Medium had vowed to track down everyone responsible or die trying. Four of the people on her target list, people she deemed responsible for her daughter's disappearance, were now in prison. Another six were dead at the hands of the Mexican Marines gunned down in a raid of the ranch from which the group operated. Retribution for Median began as a means to transform pain into purpose, and then became an all-consuming force. And now, based on a tip, she was close to her new target. Number 11, the florist. As she moved among the vendors up toward the bridge itself, she clutched a photo, the sole image she had of the florist. Skinny, with oval eyes and a bright complexion, the florist still very much looked like an adolescent. Medium had known him as a child when he sold roses on the streets of San Fernando, where they lived in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas. The florist had moved to San Fernando as a kid and had stopped attending school in order to earn a living. In later years, he struggled to read and write. On his daily rounds, he would often walk past Medium's store with a bouquet of roses under his arm. Medium had once had a soft spot for the boy. He was skinny and not well looked after, in her opinion. If he passed her market and Medium and their three more fortunate children were eating, she would invite the florist to join them. But like the town itself, the florist of earlier years had become little more than a memory. Once a small village of farmers and cattle ranchers, San Fernando was now cursed, run on violence and fear by the Zeta drug cartel. Consumed by the same daylight gunfights, beheadings, and disappearances that plowed through all of Tamaulipas, located in the far northeast of the country. The town was now infamous for the atrocities that had come to define Mexico's war on drugs, the military campaign launched by the Mexican government in 2006 to curtail the flow of narcotics to the United States, and the growing power of the drug cartels who were moving them. With Mexican soldiers on the streets, violence between the army and the cartels grew ubiquitous and unpredictable. The military fought the cartels fought one another, and innocents trapped on the battlefronts fell prey to the volatile whims of armed groups. Now on the street leading up to the bridge, Medium walked by eateries, money changers, and pharmacies selling Viagra, studying the faces of everyone she passed. The moment she hung up with the tipster, she had called Luis to drive her to the bridge, located 2 hours north in Matamoros, a bustling city of 500,000 people. Though she and Luis had separated years before, they still worked together, an unlikely pair of vigilantes, to find Karen's killers. Medium paused every few minutes to show locals the photo of the florist, hoping someone might have seen him in the area. Street hawkers often recognized one another, even total strangers. Luis sold home goods and cowboy hats in the San Fernando Market, a single-story building fronted by a brick colonnade near the town center. She worked there, too, selling cowboy boots from her own store, and she could remember the face of just about everyone that came and went with any regularity. But none of the people she asked now recalled seeing the florist, not from her dated picture, anyhow. She edged closer to the toll plaza at the end of the street, where vehicles and pedestrians climbed toward the bridge's twin spans leading in and out of Mexico. Median moved with a deftness that belied her age, sliding in and out of stores and among the individuals crowding the sidewalk. She stood about 5'6", with short cropped hair, a round face, and metal-frame eyeglasses. At 56, she got around with greater ease than she ever had in her 30s and 40s. For most of her life, Median had been obese. Though always particular about her looks, wearing earrings and makeup and carefully selected matching outfits for even the most basic outings, she had weighed more than 350 pounds in the mid-2000s. Her friends called her Gordita Bonita, a playful way of referring to someone both large and beautiful. Fed up with the physical constraints of her weight, Medium decided to get a gastric bypass in 2007.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?